You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this beautiful day here in Southern California. We're going to be talking today with a fractional CFO from Colorado who's got some very interesting ideas on forecasting growth and finding out exactly what kind of return we can get from our investments. So welcome, LJ Suzuki. Welcome, LJ.
Thank you, Will. Nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your company in your CFO share in Colorado.
Yep. So CFO share, we believe that small businesses deserve professional financial strategy. So we are an outsourced finance and accounting department available on a part-time basis for small businesses. That means every role that you'd have at a corporate finance and accounting department, from bookkeeping all the way up to CFO work, we have in our group available for our customers to help them grow.
Well, so what kind of companies do you work with? Talk to me a little about your ideal company.
Yep. So we've worked with all kinds of small businesses, from pre-revenue startups all the way up to $50 million manufacturing companies that are private equity owned and part of a rolled up conglomerate. But really, my favorite customer to work with is a closely held small business, maybe somewhere between $2 million in revenue and $15 million in revenue, who's looking to grow, who's looking to pivot, or who's thinking about making a change, maybe an ownership or a change in their business. And that's really when there's a fair amount of risk and uncertainty, and when having a financial expert on hand can really help you mitigate that type of risk.
And so now, is your work done face-to-face, or is it generally done remotely?
Yeah, good question. So we are here in Denver, Colorado. We have quite a few customers here in Denver that I like to meet face-to-face. However, we work nationwide, and so the majority of our customers, we work entirely remotely. Now I get around the country here and there, and I'll stop in and visit people to say hi because I like to meet people in person. But we do have some customers that we've never met with before. We just do video conferences or talk on the phone.
Any in Southern California?
I actually have quite a few in Southern California.
Oh,
so I'll give you a call the next time I'm down there.
Super. Love to see you. So you've got this interesting concept about analyzing the cost of growth. So now let me set this up for you. As an EOS implementer, I work with lots of companies, and every one of them wants to grow. I mean, that's part of why they get involved with the entrepreneurial operating system is they've been hitting the ceiling, something's going on that they're not getting what they want from their business, and so they're looking for a system. We give them a system, and they're always looking to grow. So when we look at, what's your 15-year, 20-year, 25-year target, it's generally a multiple of where they are right now. And so we're continually looking at how much revenue they got at the end of the year. That's one goal. The second goal is what kind of profit did we get? And so that whole idea of profit, I suppose from a family ownership, profit might be how much money did we, or were we able to sock away into the bank? But from a company that wants to grow, they're always investing that profit in the company. And I help leadership teams to recognize that their profit is really before they make all of those investments.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm hearing from you is that there are tools to be used to help people decide where they want to make their investments and what they can expect from the returns on investment. Is that right?
Correct. And in the finance world, we've talked about return on investment before when it comes to a financial investment. So we think about it when purchasing stocks, for example, for our own personal retirement accounts. What's the return on investment? And in the business world, we'll think about what's the return on investment for purchasing machinery or purchasing a new warehouse or something like that. But I want people to start thinking about what's the return on investment from hiring a salesperson? What's the return on investment from purchasing a Google pay-per-click advertising campaign? What's the return on investment from updating the SEO on my website? And in the past, marketers might have told us, well, it's impossible to measure this ROI. Or salespeople would have told you, well, you just look at the revenue that I bring in, and if it's greater than my salary, then you're doing well. And we've come up with some more sophisticated ways to do that I would challenge entrepreneurs to start thinking about. Okay. This is something that once you figure out how to calculate this ROI, you can start building it into your forecast. You can start building it into your budget. And you could say, hey, we're going to grow our revenue 20% this year, although we're expecting our profits to go down because we're making these investments. But we know these investments are going to pay off because we've done the math on it. So this is a concept that has been pioneered originally by the software as a service industry. And they started looking at it in a very basic way through what they call the golden ratio. You can Google the golden ratio and you'll see it's the ratio of customer lifetime value to customer acquisition cost. Okay. Customer acquisition cost is fairly well known and fairly well managed. It's something that if you hire a marketing team to do your advertising or your social media, they will probably be measuring themselves on that metric. And that is basically your total sales, advertising, and marketing expense divided by the number of new customers that you got during that period. That was the cost for you to acquire one customer. Great. So that's the cost of the machinery that you're buying to grow your business. But what's the ROI that you're going to get on that machinery? That's where the other piece of the ratio comes in, lifetime value. And so lifetime value is the total profits that you get from a customer during that customer's life. Now, check this out online. There's all kinds of ways that people measure lifetime value, but generally it's easiest, again, for software as a service companies. It's a lot harder if you're a manufacturer or if you're a retailer or if you're a service provider, like a professional service provider. But there are ways to calculate this. And this is what we really like to help our clients figure out is what is their customer lifetime value? How does that shake out over a period of time? And then based on that, what is the ROI on your investment in sales, in marketing, and in advertising? And should I be investing in direct sales or should I be investing in ads? Should I be investing in search engine optimization for my business or should I be investing in new product development or should I be investing in that piece of machinery? This puts it all on an apples-to-apples basis for you so that you can make the right decision or the right combination of decisions to grow your business and have realistic expectations for what your net income at the end of the year is going to be.
Well, now, a lot of variables that you're using to put together to input into this tool. I find it very interesting when someone's talking about doing a Google search, a Google Ads campaign, and you ask them what kind of return should we be getting in terms of interest, new leads. They can't tell me.
That's really interesting. And I always think it's great that eventually marketers and advertisers find a way out of being accountable to their results.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're going to be planning your business, you need to understand your whole sales conversion funnel from top to bottom, right? And of course, the top is the leads being fed in through Google Ad or through social media or something like that, right? But then you need to have it mapped out, the stages from there on. And it's going to be different for an e-commerce company than for a professional service company than for, you know, an Internet of Things company. But understand what that funnel is and how it converts. Even if you haven't sold a customer, if you're pre-revenue startup, right, just make up a funnel based on what you expect. And then once you start getting the ads from this Google campaign that you've just started, see how it shakes out through the funnel. Is it meeting your expectations in terms of conversion, or is it beating your expectations, or is it falling short? Mm-hmm. To me, that's how I would measure the success of the campaign. And if you understand your customer lifetime value and you understand your sales funnel, then you know what you need to be converting at and how much you need to be paying for a lead in order to make that work.
Well, now that presumes that I'm going to have time to experience this and reflect on it, but you're asking me as a business owner to be planning and making decisions based upon data that I'm only going to learn 6 months down the path.
Correct. And that's one of the biggest challenges with customer lifetime value, right? People like to say an average customer lifetime value is 3 years across all industries, okay? Obviously, some will be more, some will be less, right? But 3 years is the average. Okay, well, you as a business owner can't wait 3 years to find out whether that's true or not,
right?
And then start planning off of that. You need to start making decisions today so that you can make it to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we get into the art of forecasting. Just because we haven't gone the full 3 years and seen customers die off doesn't mean that we can't start making predictions about it. But you have to understand, where do we get the data? How do we manipulate the data? And how do we make an intelligent forecasting assumption based off of that? That's something that my group spends a lot of time thinking and doing for clients. We've become kind of experts at it. And so it seems relatively simple to me, but it's a really daunting task to most people.
Is it benchmarking across an industry or a niche?
Benchmarking is a good gut check, but I always prefer to start with the data that a client natively has. So let's say you've been in business for 3 months, and let's say you're an e-commerce company. Okay, you're selling t-shirts. You're selling these specialty t-shirts. And in the three-month time period, you've sold 1,000 of these t-shirts. Okay, so the questions that I'm going to ask is, how many of those were new customers versus how many of those were repeat customers? How many returns did you get from those first 2 months of sales versus the third month of sales? All right, we're going to use those figures to try to understand how engaged is your client base, how much are they referring each other to other people, how much are they going to come back for new SKUs, for new products. And we can use those data points to start to come up with estimates to figure out what your customer lifetime value is.
I can appreciate how you could do that with an online t-shirt seller. What I'm curious about is how you could do that with a manufacturer who is manufacturing steel windows and doors that are sold to a luxury market, or a manufacturing company that is manufacturing pumps that are sold to municipalities as well as swimming pools and others like that around the country and now globally. How would you begin to put that kind of data together?
Yeah, great question. So let's take the example of your pump manufacturer, because that's going to be the most challenging one. They could have potentially hundreds of customers. Some have bought from them once. Some have been buying from them for 10 years. There's all kinds of variety that would fit in there. Some of them are for municipal swimming pools. Some are for industrial use. Some of them might be going over to Africa. Okay.
Right.
So those are really wide ranging different customers. And to come up with an average on that is very challenging. So what we actually start to do is we start to segment customers into groups, okay? There's going to be the high usage people, the people that order every month. Maybe they have open accounts that, they just send them aggregate invoices once a month because there's so much that's going through. Then they're going to have, the one and done people that use them once and never come back again. Maybe international is going to be a different segment. It's going to depend on the business, and we're talking hypothetically here, so we'll just use this as an example in our heads.
Sure.
But once we've split up the customers and we've got an order history to work off, we start to run statistics on those customer groupings and understand, okay, how does this group behave? How does this group behave? These one and done people, where did we get them from? Did they just look us up in the yellow books, or were they referred to us by somebody else? Or maybe we were doing outbound calling for a while and that's how we got them. And you start to see patterns about where people came from, how they engage with you, what their behavior is, what products they're interested in. And it's those patterns, once you recognize those patterns, that's what allows you to start making forecasts about customer life. And that's what reveals the strategy that's behind that to say, hey, screw the yellow pages. We're not getting good customer leads out of there. These are all the one and done people. Our good customers are coming from direct outbound sales. So we need to hire more salespeople. And here's the numbers that prove it. And here's the ROI we're going to get out of that. So I, as a business owner, am willing to invest $200,000 into new Salesforce this year because I know it's going to pay for itself. But it all begins with taking that step back and looking at the business and saying, let's understand our customers and let's understand the data we have about them.
Well, I'm going to throw in a little hook here, because let's suppose that manufacturer is actually selling through 200 different representatives. that are not on the payroll.
Yeah. So yeah. And so
how does that affect the cost of growth analysis?
Yeah. Well, it's going to depend on what we have. If our customer in our books is 200 different sales representatives, then that's the information that we have. And our sales representatives are our distribution channels.
Yes.
So if you've got, 30 that are rock stars, 150 that are okay, and then 20 that are underperforming, I'd say let's talk to your vice president of sales and show him that distribution and say, hey, tell us about these people. What is it about them, right? What with these 30 rock stars, what do they do? Where are they from? How long have they been with the company? What is it about what they do that makes them special? And I guarantee you the VP of sales knows the answer to that, right? Mm-hmm. And when he gives us that information, when we mix the qualitative information with the quantitative information, that is the intersection where strategy occurs.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that's what you're talking about in terms of strategy is comes off of your analysis about the cost of growth.
Right. The cost of growth is a quantitative tool, and quantitative analysis is extremely important in terms of making objective decisions, but qualitative analysis is also very important. And without both of them, you're kind of driving with just one headlight on, So this tool needs to be interpreted and communicated to the management team. And the management team needs to have an input on what goes into the tool. And that iterative process creates a conversation that aligns people and drives a smarter, more sophisticated strategy and allows everyone to walk out of the room marching in the same direction.
Ah, well, that's interesting because that's exactly what EOS promises, is to have
every
leader and ultimately everybody in the organization rowing in the same direction. All know exactly
as
where we're
critical.
Going. And how we're going to get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a tool that would refine that vision.
Correct. Yeah. I can make a spreadsheet say anything, right? But if people don't believe it and they don't follow it, there was no point in doing the exercise. Mm-hmm. So to me, the most important part of delivering an analysis or a tool to a group of people is getting them to understand it, accept it, enjoy it, and use it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So how do we introduce this to companies, 5 million to, you're thinking about companies that, tell me about the smaller companies, $1 million company that wants to become a $5 million company. How will this affect them?
Yeah, great question. So I can actually give you a smaller example. I have a customer who right now is earning $15,000 a month in revenue. Okay. He's an app developer and he's created an app that is out on the store that, you can get it for $10 a month or $80 a year, something like that. So he's got, not that many subscribers and he's deliberately not growing very quickly right now because what he's doing is he's trying different advertising strategies. He's trying different things in terms of offering a 7-day trial, not offering a 7-day trial, making people enter their email address. Some people pay through the credit card. Some people pay through the app store. He's trying all these different things. And with each experiment, we are plotting the customer acquisition cost and the lifetime value of that customer. And we're looking at which one has the most favorable ratio. Which one has the highest retention rate? Which one do customers pay the highest price per month or sign up for premium products? And he's happy staying at $15,000 a month in revenues and losing money every single month because he is learning so much from these experiments. And once he's got it totally dialed in, he's going to take his $500,000 in cash reserves and dump it into whichever channel or whichever strategy it is that's going to get him the most efficient and most effective growth. And then he's going to start making money. So that's an example of how somebody that's almost a pre-revenue startup can use a cost of growth analysis to really educate what they're doing so that they're spending their precious capital in the most effective way.
Well, that sounds to me like the kind of task that a marketing division should be doing.
So the marketing division typically looks at the first half of the equation, your customer acquisition cost. And they'll say, okay, great, I want to get you customers for as cheap as possible. And on the surface, that seems like a very reasonable goal, right? If you can spend as little to get customers, then you get a higher ROI when the customers actually spend. You don't have to recover as much in that expense. But the issue there is sometimes the easiest customers to get have the shortest lifetimes or the smallest basket sizes or aren't going to give you good referrals. And so if you get a cheap customer, it's not necessarily going to pay out the best for you in the long run. So this is why you need the full view of also understanding what is the customer's lifetime value on the back end. And if it's worth it for me to pay more to get a customer through a more expensive channel, if they're going to have a proportionally higher lifetime value in the end.
Well, when you come into a business, does that threaten the marketing department?
Good question. So it depends. Typically, marketing teams aren't looking at the lifetime value side of things anyways, and they don't want to look at the lifetime value side of things. They're mostly care about getting new customers in the door. And so to the extent that we can empower them by telling their manager, their business owner, hey, these three channels are very effective for your marketing team to go after, and we encourage you to increase their budget to do that, then the marketing teams like us for that. And to the effect that we can tell, guide them like, hey, these three are not effective for you, we recommend pulling it back, they're happy because we can get them better metrics for that. So to the same extent that you have to get alignment in the full management team for what you're doing, it's the same issue in the marketing department.
Huh. Well, that's valuable. That's very valuable. So how do you go about finding companies that invite you in?
Yeah. So nowadays, we actually don't really have to find anybody. They're mostly finding us. We get a lot of referrals, get a lot of inbound traffic over the internet. And typically the companies we're looking at are companies that you're working with too, right? They're small businesses that are looking to grow. And maybe they've hit a limit that they're having trouble getting over. Maybe they've just closed a fresh round of investor capital, and they want to make sure that they deploy that fresh capital in a really smart and effective way. Or, you know, maybe they've just been coasting for several decades and enjoying the lifestyle business, but they realize that things need to change because their market is shrinking or their market's shifting, or they want to sell the business and it's not worth anything if it's a stagnant business. So those people usually come find us and they say, you know, I need help budgeting this growth. I'm not sure if I have enough money to invest in the sales force. I'm not sure if I have enough money to pivot into this new market. I'm not sure how to plan this, right? When can I hire people? And those are all questions. If you're asking yourself that, you probably need a cost of growth analysis worked into your budget and your forecast.
So I'm curious about how much, what kind of time does a leadership team need to invest? What kind of resources? And, you know, if you can help us to understand, what kind of cost is there going to be here?
Yeah. No, those are all great questions. Okay. So like so many things, right? Like you kind of get what you put into it. Mm-hmm. We can crunch numbers all day long, but ultimately we need you as the business owner's expertise and your management team's expertise in how the business functions so that we can build the models correctly. So a typical project would look like us having a kickoff meeting to learn about the basics of your business, review your historical financials, and then understand what data systems you work with. Maybe you've got an ERP system, maybe you've got a different inventory system, maybe you're entirely online on cloud-based integrated platforms that all dump into a central database somewhere. So we understand what that is, we go mining through the data, and then we try to make sense out of it. That whole project of making the sense of the data, building the model, talking to the team about it, talking to the management, coming back, modeling, talking to management, coming back, usually takes about 2 to 3 weeks. And we'll finish that 2 to 3 week cycle and present them with, hey, here's what we've found. Now, the view is never complete, right? Because it's business. Business is never complete. There's always a next step. There's always more to go after. But you get to an 80-20 where it's like, we have a bunch of new information. It's time to socialize it. Talk about that, what that means for our strategy, and then talk about next steps from there. Sometimes it's just, we share the information. It's good to know. And, you know, the team takes that and moves forward on their own. Sometimes it's, this is really good and it's changing. So we need to keep updating this on a monthly basis. So then we'll continue to maintain that model once a month and have a meeting and talk to people about it. And sometimes the answer is, hey, this is radically different than how we've seen the world in the past. And because it's radically different and because it's innovative and useful, we need to update our forecast to include this. We need to update our budget to include this. We need to update some KPIs or some other tools that marketing are using so that we have good visibility of this as we continue to move forward. And so then that rolls into other projects where we assist with that. Now, generally speaking, you know, the price, the cost to the customer is going to depend on the complexity of the customer. We've done this for as low as $2,500 for some of our smaller startup clients. We've done it for as high as $10,000 to $15,000 for larger, more complicated clients. Good. So it just depends.
Good, good. And the value that they get from this would be a mini multiple of the cost.
Yeah, if you figure, if you're spending $10,000 a month on either salespeople or on marketing budgets, then this is a fraction of that. This is like an insurance policy, mm-hmm. just to understand whether or not you're spending that money effectively.
And you're saying it for the initial results that are actionable, it's 2 to 3 weeks. Is that right?
Correct. Correct. Yep.
How much time does like a $17 million company need to spend accumulating the data for you?
In terms of gathering the data or in terms of, so we try to do as much of the gathering ourselves so that we're not taking your sales team's time because they have important things to do too, right? And the last thing they want to be doing is pulling reports for some random consultant.
Right.
So typically what we try to do is get online on your systems so that we can pull the data and we can manipulate it and we don't have to inconvenience you with it. All we do is inconvenience the IT guy.
Yeah. That's excellent. So what you're really doing is asking for access to the systems that are going to give you the data you need.
Correct.
Good, good, good. Well, where, let me ask you, go in a different direction now. Where do you as a company want to be? Where do you want to be? Let's suppose that we are getting together 3 years from now. And you're looking back on this 3 years and you're saying, wow, I'm really pleased with the progress we've made. What would have to change in that 3 years for you to have that kind of experience?
Yeah, great question. And there's all kinds of ways to measure that. But in the vein of what we've been talking about here today, mm-hmm. I want to see these metrics, these cost of growth metrics, customer acquisition cost, customer lifetime value, and the details behind them mm-hmm. broken out in a statement that is published monthly with every company's financials, including in the public markets. Now, I think we're a long ways away from people coming to a standard that makes sense, coming up with, you know, GAAP standards behind it, and then mm-hmm. implementing that. It's probably not going to happen in 3 years, but I would love to see some serious momentum, some mm-hmm. good traction out there with the finance and the marketing communities, embracing this idea that we need some standard reporting that we can compare side by side with all of our companies to understand what is the cost of growth in this company, in this industry, in what they're doing, so that we have a better idea paired with their income statement, their balance sheet, and their statement of cash flows of how successful the company is.
Okay, so you'd like to see that become just an accepted, normal reporting piece?
The fourth financial statement. I'd like it to be the fourth financial statement.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what, talk about obstacles, hurdles, talk about dangers. What could get in the way of that happening?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say the biggest threat is that we just have so much success and so much work at this group that we continue to implement it and don't spend enough time innovating it and really pushing it with our peers in the industry to make that successful. And, you know, that's an easy trap to fall into, right? If people are looking for your services and you're keeping busy, which we are, we can just keep executing, and losing sight of the grand vision, which is innovating and changing the way that things are done.
So what might you do to counter that?
So what I'm trying to do right now actually is get out of the operations of my company. I've got a really great team here, mm-hmm. and they've got great heads on their shoulders. They know all the details of what I just spoke to you about, and they're the ones that are the main doers right now. I step in and I help them because right now we're short-staffed and we're trying to hire some more. Mm-hmm. But I need to get out of the operation and spend more time, you know, being the business development person, making the connections with other people in the industry, communicating with academia, and helping get this idea published and accepted around the financial and the business community.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is not going to bring you a ton of money, just getting the whole tool, the whole idea in doing the kind of things that you want to do to make it part of the fourth financial reporting, right?
No, it probably won't.
Okay.
But, you know.
But this is a way to help businesses be better.
Correct. And that's what I'm in this for. So, I started your podcast with my elevator pitch where I said, I believe small businesses deserve professional financial strategy. Mm-hmm. That is the why of why we do what we do. And this serves that why directly. Mm-hmm. To the extent that we can change the norms so that every business benefits, I only see that as a win. And, you know, we make enough money doing what we do anyways. I don't need to become, you know, multi-billionaire off of this, mm-hmm. right? We live comfortably and we have healthy careers.
Right.
What matters more to me is innovating, changing the world, helping small businesses become successful. Because when small business is successful, the economy is successful. When the economy is successful, the world attains a higher level of peace.
All right. Well, I share that with you because for me, I can only use 20, 25 clients. I'm really pushing it when I get more than 20. Now, some of my colleagues around the country, there's 350 of us around the country doing this, doing the EOS model, implementing it. And there's some that are doing more than 25, but 20 is plenty for me. And that means that I got to really focus on helping these companies become the best they can be. And maybe mm-hmm. Over 3 to 5 years, I can have 50 to 75 companies that I've worked with. But when we accumulate that with 300, which is going to be 700, we're looking at 30, 40, 50, 100,000 companies by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
a big impact.
Mm-hmm. It is. And all those companies touch other people too.
Absolutely.
And if they can, you know, if your work can make that experience even just 10% better, I mean, that ripple is enormous.
Yes. So what opportunities do you have right now that you can capitalize on to accomplish this daunting task that you have before yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we need to take the work that we've done with clients in the past and try to figure out how do you standardize that into something that can be generalized that, you know, that we can come up with standards for.
Mm-hmm.
And once we put that together, I have a few connections out here in the Denver academic community with CU Boulder and with Metro State University out here, a couple places where I've helped guest teach entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And they've expressed interest in taking this concept and publishing it academically into the business journals. And I think that's the next step, to expose it to a broader audience outside of the startup community, outside mm-hmm. of the software as a service community, and see how well it gets accepted.
Good. So tell me about your strengths in pursuing this.
Me personally?
Sure. Well, you're the one that's going to make it happen, right? I mean, that's what you said. The danger was that you get sucked into the chaos of doing the operations, right?
Yes.
And I heard that your plan for avoiding that was to hire more people and to begin to focus on being that visionary and helping, making connections with other people, communicating with academia, begin to put together the standards. And so it's really going to be up to you. So what is your strengths that can you be used good, to accomplish this?
You're a good listener. I got to give it to you. I mean, so the easy one is, you know, we have this, we've done it and we've done it successfully and see how it helps companies. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, the IP piece of it, I suppose. But the piece of it for me, you know, I'm very passionate about this. Mm-hmm. And we touched on that a few minutes ago when we were talking about the why, you know, why would I do this if I'm not trying to make a lot of money out of it? Mm-hmm. I'm passionate about it. And that passion gives you a lot of energy and a lot of stamina to pursue something that maybe is innovative. And so it doesn't always please everybody or doesn't always get quickly accepted. Mm-hmm. I think also, you know, I bring a lot to the table in terms of being able to take very complex ideas, especially complex financial ideas, and boil them down into relatively plain English that any business person can understand. And that's a special skill set within our community, because numbers people generally aren't the best communicators. It's, you know, a left brain, right brain kind of thing. And I do bring that piece of it to the table.
Mm-hmm. So do you want any help with this?
I'll take as much help as I can get. Yes. Good. I'm always happy to forge alliances with this. Are you interested?
Good. Well, no, I can certainly introduce you to clients here and allow you to, you know, what I'm hearing is that you don't need new clients, that you're not going to push them away, but that what might be really helpful to you is having the interaction with business owners and financial people in those businesses so that you can have that conversation with them and refine, reinforce, and capture the communication that you want to do to begin to spread it around.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we're pretty busy right now, like I said, and we're going to keep on growing, you know, so I'm always happy to talk to new clients, although we're not aggressively going out with marketing campaigns right now, trying to grab them. Mm-hmm. But that is the way that this idea is going to spread, is by exposing it to people kind of one at a time, little by little, bootstrapping it up, if you want to take it that way. Right. And, you know, once we've standardized it and packaged it and found a way that, you know, it can be understood by all industries, then we start spreading the word on a much more massive scale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I see that I can help you with, is helping you, put you in front of groups of people here in Orange County, maybe via Zoom, or maybe you fly down here, we do it face to face and I can take you to lunch. But
yeah,
it's really helping you communicate and refine that communication so that you can then move it through the academic world.
Yeah, perfect. That would be great.
Excellent. Well, all right. All right. So what would you like to say to the people who are listening? And these are generally small business owners, you know, 10 to 250 employees here in Orange County.
Yeah. I will just go ahead and say that being an entrepreneur, you lose a lot of sleep over all kinds of different things, right? And at the end of the day, you don't have to be losing sleep, right? Losing sleep comes from uncertainty, it comes from worrying, it comes from anxiety, and a little bit of planning and a nice, reliable team that you trust helps quell those types of things. So never be afraid to reach out and ask for help, whether that's to someone else on your team, one of your advisors, a family member, or a professional like our organization.
Well, if somebody wanted to talk to you, how would they get in touch with you?
Best way to get a hold of me is to go to cfoshare.org. From there, you can do one of two things. You can send a message through our box, and that will go directly to my inbox. Or you can even schedule a meeting on my calendar at a time that suits you as well. It'll book directly on, and you and I will be in touch before you know it.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot. This has been a very informative and interesting conversation, and it's just another way to show how businesses in California can thrive.
Thank you, Will. It's been my pleasure.
Good.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.